The next guiding principle is the human productivity. The human productivity rule says that people cannot be expected to perform activities with a uniform production over a course of time over a business day. So there are multiple factors that reduce or diminish productivity, and it basically has to take into account the consistency to deliver the same output over a period of time. So what does this mean? Assuming that you've factored, say, a subject matter expert. But if you've factored a subject matter expert to work for, say, 12 hours in a day, the output, if you plot the graph, the output will not be the same. It will not be a straight line for the entire 12 hours or the 8 hours that you factored. The output will kind of diminish, right? And that's the law of diminishing returns. You cannot expect humans to deliver the same consistent performance over a period of time with the same scenario. So let's take an example again, the domain consultant or the subject matter expert working on a project. The expert was supposed to be working, say, on a project for 10 days, 8 hours in a day. Now that we know his efforts, we can apply the hourly rate, right? So say 100 rupees per hour is the rate, and you've accounted for this particular cost. But this is the base estimate. There will be factors, things like project loss factors, rework, that will erode the productivity of the expert. So what I mean to say is that everything will not go as per plan. There might be certain places where rework activities might be needed. So say if a code was written and maybe there were certain bugs found, then it has to be rewritten or reworked. So there can also be some non-project loss, say things like that particular subject matter expert on, say, sick leaves or holidays in between, right? So as a result, the actual work would be lower than the base estimate that was formed. Usually, it is assumed that 1/8 of the baseline is lost due to loss of productivity. As I mentioned, we cannot really assume a straight line curve for the human productivity, because there would be certain diminishing productivity that will happen over a period of time, because it's bound by human nature. So one is there could be issues like burnouts, there could be issues like loss of productivity because of time pressures, or there could be certain non-project related factors as well. So things like sick leaves, things like exigencies, which cannot be taken into account. But this is a guiding principle while you are doing, say, human productivity calculation. 1/8 of the baseline is lost due to productivity. So this is what I was assuming. So person hours required. So say it was 100, and then the number of experts that are assigned to a project. So this basically recognizes the trade-offs between these three elements. So one is time, cost, and the resources. So if you see LMNOP, there is certain loss of productivity, and then the number of hours required go on increasing as maybe, say, the number of people increase. So the whole curve here focuses on time, cost, and resource. So this is a trade-off rule. So as we stated, again, it's not a straight line curve, because you cannot assume everything to be in a straight line. You have to account for the loss of productivity. And as we stated in the previous slide, 1/8 is the loss of productivity that can be assumed. So this brings us to guideline number 5, which is time, cost, and resource trade-off rule. The same principle extending about the human productivity here. So this particular productivity, it decreases with every additional assignment. So as it is indicated in the table, you refer here, right? So the data point here is LMNOP, the staffing pattern. So this is say 2 hours in a day, or this is 4 hours in a day. And the actual time duration is a factor of these, say 35 days. And assuming that there are 70 hours needed, right? And this is the cost. So the whole point here is that the table below here says that, and I'll take you through the figure here. So it doesn't come in a straight line. The number of experts assigned in the project here might be more, and then there is a trade-off between cost and the resource that has to happen. The other thing is we also need to look at, after these guiding principles, the ones that we saw, specific estimation scenarios for the software industry. These are, say, things like a maintenance project versus, say, a new project. And this brings us to the question between, say, a greenfield project and a brownfield project. A greenfield project is something that is starting from scratch. You have everything unknown here, and you start from the basic questioning, and then you move the way forward. Estimation models are calibrated to produce efforts and scheduled estimates for new development projects, assuming that everything is created from scratch, as I just mentioned. However, this is not the case if you are working on maintenance projects. So these are generally termed as production support or ongoing phase in a particular project, where either you are maintaining the additional the existing functionality, so maybe you are giving ongoing support, or you are modifying some existing functionality. So in this case, when there is a modification of an existing functionality, it's not to be treated as a greenfield or area which starts from scratch, because there is already something in place, and then you are building on top of it or modifying that to achieve your business objective. So that's a typical brownfield deployment. Assuming that there are certain patches that need to be released, there are code updates in your code, say there were certain bugs that were found, or there is some additional functionality that has to be incorporated in the existing product. So these are more or less treated as brownfield projects, because these are not absolutely greenfield. The functionality is already existing, it just has to be enhanced. So these are termed as brownfield or new deployment. So using these models may vary the estimates of maintenance projects. So you cannot really estimate the enhancement, the feature functionality enhancement, because it has to be treated as a change request. So it's not a new project, but it has to be treated as a change on the existing functionality. So often maintenance work has fixed delivery dates and is done by fixed number of people. So once your coding is done, a project is delivered, a platform is rolled out to the end customer, and that's where the customer would also expect the day-to-day support or the maintenance work or the operation support to be done by the vendor. So the maintenance work in this case has fixed delivery dates. So say from 1st of January to 31st of December, it has to be maintained. And it's done by a set of a few people. So even in the maintenance contract, it is said that, say, X number of people would work on the maintenance project in a 24/7 shift, or maybe a 8/5 shift, etc., etc. And that fits in with the overall time frame, and a contractual obligation is set basis the efforts. In case of smaller projects, many organizations work on small projects, which are generally defined as having a fixed number of people, rather than and maybe a schedule of less than say 6 months. So again, this 6 months or say one or two people is not very sacrosanct. It can be changed basis the requirement. So these kind of projects are usually called as T&M projects. So these are time and material projects, where you define that because this is a small requirement, there'll be say one or two people with a schedule of X number of months. So existing industry data project estimation models are not really calibrated for such small projects, and hence there is little or no use unless they are adequately adjusted to that particular use case for that particular small project data only, right? These cannot be used as a wide level estimate for other industry benchmarking estimates, because these are more specific. So say one small utility or one small module needs to be developed, and then there was an estimate that was done, say two resources working for 8x5 for 3 months. So this is a very small example if the functionality is really small. Well, if it was say a big ERP implementation, it would not really work in this particular way. Estimates for small projects are highly dependent again on the capability of the individual, because in this case you identified the two resources, you know what are their skill set, and you know how they would work in a typical scenario. So they are best estimated directly by those who are assigned to the project, and then the estimates become highly subjective, because the estimates are based on say the two resources you already know, what are the skill sets they carry, what is the past experience that they have, and what is the probability that they will deliver the same outcome in this particular project. So it is absolutely subjective in this case. Okay, let us look at estimating a project in the software industry, which is an absolutely new domain project. So estimating a project in the new application domain, maybe an application which was not developed in the past, or which is on a new technology, maybe a new leading edge project, say something which is to do with augmented reality, which was not done in the past, where no one in the organization has any previous experience, right? So estimating such projects can be obviously challenging, because you don't have any set benchmarks, you don't have a baseline. So while estimating for the first time, you are dealing with absolutely a lot of unknowns. For things that have been done in the past, you could use the different estimation techniques that we saw, say things like analogous estimation, right? But in this case, because it's absolutely new, no one knows in this particular case, so you have to deal with a lot of uncertainty, and there is no way that you would predict everything accurately. So there is no way to get out of it except do a lot of risk assessment, put a lot of buffers, but at the same time manage the expectations of the stakeholders also. So generally these projects, as I said, are high risks, where you are treading in uncharted territories, right? Because they have not been attempted in the industry so far, because of varied reasons, new use case, maybe a new technology, maybe things like say artificial intelligence, or maybe augmented reality as an example that I gave, right? So in such a case, how should it be looked at? So in such cases, a iterative life cycle is advisable, such as maybe a incremental release model, where delivery is done in multiple steps, or say using a spiral model where you revisit the estimates after every step. So after every step, you see what was the progress made. You look at the risk, then you assess the risk, and then create a new estimate. So this way, it is better because you are protecting your interest of the internal stakeholders, as well as you are communicating the same to the customer, because even the customer should appreciate the fact that it's a completely new domain, and everyone's would want to, you know, work together to ensure that the unknowns are then covered and you achieve the success out of it. In this particular case where things are unknown and it's a new domain altogether, traditional model like say a waterfall model is absolutely not suited. Because if you recollect, in one of the previous sessions we spoke about the benefits of waterfall model, where the waterfall model is more suited for things that are static in nature, where the business requirements are critically where the business requirements are clearly stated, and then there is no room for changing dynamic requirements. In this particular case, since it's a new domain, even the customer might not be completely aware of all the requirements. Surely he would have a business objective in mind, but the low level or the subcategories of the objectives might not be clear at the start of the project. And that's where it's the fear of the unknowns that will cause the project not to be delivered properly unless the steps are taken. So what should be the guidelines or what should be the steps taken when you are incorporating a new domain projects? Something that is absolutely new. So make sure that the risks are clearly communicated, not just to your internal stakeholders, but also to the customers. Even the customer should be on board when we talk about a absolutely new project of its kind. If it's a new project, if it's a new technology which is being implemented for the first time, although the customer would put a lot of confidence basis the past record of the software vendor, but even the customer should be on board saying that because it's a new thing which was not attempted, we'll work towards seeing how it can be bettered. Avoid making any major commitments, things like having fixed deadlines. Obviously, there has to be an estimation in terms of the overall project timelines, but avoid making any stringent commitments for the timelines because things would be prone to change because it's new. So avoid doing that. Re-estimate as you become more familiar with the domain. And as we spoke on the previous slide, use things like the spiraling model or the stepwise approach where you revisit your estimates after a particular step is done. So that way you would protect the interest of your internal stakeholders, protect the cost structures and the estimates, and also clearly communicating the same to the customer would give a lot of customer confidence and make the customer feel that you are working along with him rather than working in isolation. So just to summarize, we've had a good look at what project estimation is all about. Project estimation techniques we spoke help assess the overall feasibility of a particular project, and it's crucial from the management perspective to have a look at the estimation so as to have say a go or a no-go, and we also looked at multiple different estimation techniques which should be viewed as valuable tools for project managers for forecasting say time, cost and other parameters for this particular project. Different software projects present their own challenges in terms of estimation, And we looked at how existing projects or projects that have been done in the past by software vendors serve as a benchmark towards estimating the efforts for another project. And maybe we also spent a view on how do you look at projects which are absolutely new in nature, the new domain projects. Few basic rules have been set up which act as guidelines, and we looked at the different rules. The simple but more essential rules demand separating allocation and estimation, separating efforts and the duration, planning for work, that is the actual results that need to be delivered rather than time or money. And we also looked at avoiding any kind of bias during estimation. We also saw how it is important to be perfectionist during estimation. So ask as many questions as possible, list down as detailed or meticulous activities and tasks as possible, so as to allocate the cost and the timelines to that. So with this, I would like to say thank you to you. Thank you for viewing. I hope you would have learned a lot more about estimation, the need for estimation, the different techniques of estimation, and more importantly, the guiding principles behind the entire science of estimation. So thank you so much for viewing, and I'll see you in the next class.